Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, Boulder residents argued for the arts, the libraries and housing services last night as City Council juggled money to balance the 2020 budget. We'll have more on last night's meeting coming up. Then we'll hear from State Senator Mike Foote. He was one of the co-authors of Senate Bill 181 that changed how oil and gas is regulated in the state. Well, he is transitioning out of office, but he is still very much engaged in local oil and gas regulation. And this evening, he'll be participating in a virtual forum on fracking. We'll hear more from him later in the morning. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally from Brigitte Mars. Then after headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we continue our coverage of the upcoming elections, and we'll bring you excerpts of a forum that was recently hosted by the League of Women Voters of Boulder County, featuring candidates in the State House districts 11 and 12 election races. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Colorado officials expressed concern yesterday about the alarming increase in the number of people hospitalized in the state with the coronavirus. Governor Jared Polis cautioned that care for patients could be affected if the number of hospitalizations continues to rise. As of Tuesday, close to 80% of the intensive care beds in the state were in use. At a news conference, Polis said Colorado is at a critical juncture and cannot continue this trend. He said that the state must do better, which means doubling down on wearing masks, social distancing, washing hands, and keeping activities outside where possible. As Thanksgiving and the holidays approach, Dr. Rachel Herlihy, the state's epidemiologist, said that the position the state is in is going to be in during the season depends heavily on the level of disease transmission in the next couple of weeks. The Denver Post reports that the number of new cases of COVID-19 dropped slightly last week, partly due to a decrease in infections among people ages 18 to 25. But excluding that age group, there is still a high level of transmission as new cases were flat compared to the prior week. In Boulder County, there are some positive data trends on the pandemic, according to the Boulder County Public Health Department. Director Jeff Zayek told Boulder City Council last night that the huge spike among college students when they returned to the CU campus in late August is on the decline.
Individual behavior change, and that is indicated in some of the data that we're tracking on a more frequent basis, like looking at activity on the Hill, the number of referrals that are going into disciplinary at the university, some of those kinds of things. So I just want to say that how important it is that we continue this trend.
CU Boulder was the site of the largest COVID-19 outbreak in the state, but as of yesterday, reported zero new positive tests, while Boulder County had 17 cases. A CU spokesperson said that there's been a change in behavior among college students, noting that there were no referrals from police of health code violations last weekend. CU leaders will meet with the county officials this afternoon to discuss whether students can return to in-person classes after a two-week ban that prohibited gatherings of 18 to 22-year-olds and imposed strict stay-at-home orders on more than 35 properties, largely affiliated with fraternities and sororities. Boulder County officials are reviewing the proposed expansion of Gross Reservoir by Denver Water. Community members can now share their comments and views about the project. The public comment period runs until the county commissioners make a decision. An earlier postcard sent to property owners near the reservoir incorrectly stated that the comment period was open only until October 14th. The Daily Camera reports that the expansion proposal by the state's largest water provider would raise the dam's height by more than 130 feet, increasing its capacity. It would be the largest construction project ever in Boulder County and has attracted criticism from environmentalists and those who live nearby. No public meetings or hearings about the expansion proposal have been scheduled yet. The former Boulder police officer who resigned after pointing a gun at a black student from Naropa has agreed to leave his temporary civilian position with the county sheriff's office after complaints by the Boulder NAACP chapter. The Daily Camera reports that John Smiley was found in violation of city police department policies and resigned in May 2019 after an internal investigation into his encounter with the student. After Smiley was hired by the sheriff's office, the NAACP's Boulder County chapter shared its concerns with Sheriff Joe Pelley. Pelley responded saying that The staff had spoken to Smiley and that Smiley was not enjoying the spotlight or controversy and understood it was necessary for him to leave. Smiley agreed to immediately seek other employment outside the county government. NAACP leaders wrote that they're glad Smiley will be leaving the position, as well as saying they appreciated the acknowledgement that Paley failed to consider the impact the hiring decision might have had on people of color. The city of Denver cleared out homeless encampments in the Capitol Hill neighborhood yesterday morning. The Denver Post reports the sweep happened along East 14th Avenue and Logan Street. Last week, officials posted a notice of intent to clear several Capitol Hill locations because of deteriorating conditions and a significant number of interferences with the public's use of the right-of-way, according to a city statement. The sweep occurred despite the filing of a federal lawsuit on Monday against Denver in an attempt to stop the city from clearing homeless camps. The suit claims the operations violate constitutional rights of homeless people and that sweeps also raise the risk of spreading the coronavirus. With hot, dry conditions forecast and fire still burning in the mountains, there is an air quality alert until 4 p.m. today. The National Weather Service is forecasting widespread smoke in the metro area after noon. With otherwise sunny conditions and a high of 83, smoke continues tomorrow with sunny skies and highs in the mid-90s. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. The coronavirus pandemic is not letting up, and that doesn't help local municipalities trying to pass budgets for 2021. Boulder City Council took up the recommended budget last night, while dozens of citizens begged for a reprieve from cuts to the arts, libraries and housing and human services. KGNU's Ros Brown has more.
Like other cities across the country, Boulder's finances have taken a big hit due to the health crisis. Boulder City Manager Jane Brodigam presented the 2021 budget draft to city council members last night.
As you all know, it was a really difficult budget year for us and for the entire community, really. And we had people working so hard to make this budget match the declining revenues that we have experienced.
Declines are particularly true for the sales and use tax collected by the city, which makes up nearly 40% of Boulder's revenues. With restaurants closed or with limited seating and many retail businesses on the ropes, the city expects an 11% decline in those revenues next year. As proposed, the $341 million budget is a nearly 8% decrease from the 2020 budget. But there's always a little wiggle room based on city reserves. During a virtual public hearing, Riley Mancuso argued against cuts to the library.
The fact that we've shut down several libraries and are having to reduce services and in-person services and adopt creative new solutions is precisely why libraries need more support now more than ever.
Jeff Martinez, president of the Boulder Association of Firefighters, reminded council that recommended cuts to Boulder Fire and Rescue would send the wrong message to first responders.
This nationwide pandemic has changed our job and lives forever, from the way we respond to the personal protective equipment we need on scene today. I'm here tonight to ask you all during these troubled times to stand behind your firefighters and this community by not allowing our frontline engines to be shut down with budget cuts.
The proposed budget also includes furloughs for most employees and no merit pay increase for non-union city employees. But it was the 17% proposed cut to the arts grant fund that raised the most concern. Melissa Fathman, executive director of the Dairy Arts Center, shared the organization's struggles.
The dairy is currently experiencing an 85% reduction in earned revenue due to COVID. And if the pandemic continues and theaters remain closed in March, we're talking about well over $1 million of lost earned revenue. And of course, the longer it goes on, the more that is lost.
Former city council member Jan Burton also argued that COVID should not be allowed to reverse progress Boulder has made in funding for the arts and came prepared to make a deal.
Tonight, I represent Create Boulder, a nonprofit which is proposing that council increase funding for the arts and culture grants. If council will add $100,000 back to the grants budget, Create Boulder will then fundraise and contribute an additional $50,000. thereby ensuring that the 2021 grants budget remains at 2020 levels.
Coincidentally, two reports out this week rank Boulder among the top arts communities in the nation, a fact acknowledged by Councilman Aaron Brockett.
I do support adding back in some arts grants funding, and a lot of it is because of the existential crisis that arts organizations are facing right now in our community and all across the country because of the inability to hold most kinds of in-person performances. So this is an area of unique need in our community, and if we lose them now, they may never come back.
By the end of the discussion, council had agreed to add back $200,000 to Housing and Human Services, $160,000 to the Fire Department, $100,000 to the Library budget, and $100,000 for arts grants, accepting Create Boulder's offer to raise another $50,000 for the arts. A second hearing on the city budget will be held on October 20th. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
There are currently 140 proposed fracking wells for Boulder County, and there are many groups working locally to stop those fracking wells coming to fruition. And this is in addition to the many other fracking wells already in production and the many, many wells in our neighbouring county, Weld County. Well, there will be a forum happening this evening, virtually, hosted by the Boulder County Fracking Ban Coalition. That consists of dozens of local groups, including 350 Boulder County, the Lookout Alliance and Sustainable Resilient Longmont. One of the featured speakers who will be speaking on the forum this evening, it'll be on fracking, is Mike Foote, who served in the State Senate representing Senate District 17. Representing Eastern Boulder County. Now, he is transitioning out of the state legislature now, but he was one of the co-authors of the 2019 Senate Bill 181, which changed how oil and gas is regulated in the state.
I think it was a very big bill and has the potential to make very big changes in the way that oil and gas is regulated in the state. And so far, I think the signs are pretty good, but it's still going to take another couple of years to figure out exactly how it's being implemented. We just went through, or I should say, we just got through some of a big rulemaking called the Mission Change Rulemaking, where they determined a number of things through the CRGCC, including tentative approval of the new setbacks. And those rules look pretty good. I mean, they've been implemented, or they've at least been tentatively approved for a much stronger set of rules than what we had before. So those look pretty good. And there's a number of local governments also that have used their newfound power under Senate Bill 181 to enact much stronger health and safety protections. The problem, I think, with any kind of a change like this is that it's really hard to turn the ship around in just a small amount of time. I mean, the inertia of the oil and gas industry and how it was working in Colorado for such a long time was great. And people were used to doing it a certain way. And Senate Bill 181 requires them to do it a much different way at the state level. And I think we're seeing some good signs that people are willing to do that, but it just takes time and a different mindset. So that's really what I think is going to take a little bit more time to suss out. But so far, the state and some of the local governments are seeming to take it to heart that we really need to protect health and safety first.
Well, some of the local governments are also interpreting that as a way of fostering even more development. If you look at Weld County, who said, well, maybe we can use this local control effort to fast track some permits. And I think that really shows you the contradictions that we see as a state when it comes to attitudes towards oil and gas regulation. So is this something that we're really only going to fully resolve if we have either federal legislation or statewide to the point that local control isn't an issue anymore?
Well, you bring up a good point, which is why I'm always careful to say some local governments are taking it to heart, because there's some that are not. I mean, you mentioned the Weld County example. Garfield County and a couple of other Western Slope counties are trying to do the exact opposite of what Senate Bill 181 requires. And they've lost that argument so far, particularly amongst the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. They keep pushing forward because apparently they have never seen an oil and gas operation they don't like. But really, the way the bill is set up, you're supposed to, as a local government, be protective of health and safety. The state is a floor or a basement, and the local governments can go above that, but not below it. And they continue to argue that point, but I just think they're going to continue to lose. I don't know if you, first of all, I'm not even sure a federal solution is really possible. I mean, the states will really guard their prerogative to do what's right for each state in their backyards, I think, very much. So I don't really know if there's a federal response that it would be adequate or would be required in this case. But I think Senate Bill 181 and what Colorado was doing can be a model for other states. And then other states can build upon that and maybe even do better. And then we can take those lessons and do better. I think at the end of the day, that the main paradigm shift that has to be taken to heart is that the oil and gas industry does not have a right to drill. I mean, they can if it is within the confines of health and safety. But before 181, I think you could argue, and they certainly argued, that they have a right to drill. And it was just a question of where and under what circumstances rather than if. Senate Bill 181 changes that so that the first question should be if, and then if so, under what circumstances. And so we'll see how Colorado implements that. But like I said, so far so good. I know there's a number of permits that are still outstanding that really are not protective of health and safety. So we'll see if those end up getting denied. But the first question should be if, not under what circumstances.
Well, what is the path forward do you see? And particularly for concerned residents who, okay, well, we've had Senate Bill 181, that was last year. That's not the be-all and end-all of addressing all of our issues around fossil fuel extraction. What would you like to see done as a legislator? And now, as you're transitioning out of the state legislature, as a resident of this area that has consistently been out of compliance with federal air quality standards related very much to fossil fuel extraction, what would you like to see done at a state legislative, you know, in a state legislative context, but also what can be done by residents?
Yeah, I would say kind of a two-tier track. One of those is community involvement, which has been very important in the implementation of Senate Bill 181. Community groups have made a big difference in those rules and the implementation and making sure that it's enacted the way that it was supposed to be enacted. We saw that up front when it came to the COGCC rules that were just tentatively approved. Community groups and members of the community played a huge role. The oil and gas industry, of course, had their lawyers and had their representation, but it was the community presentation and the community stories that made a big difference in some of those rules. And that can't go away. That can't just be something that the community groups decide, well, we're done with that, so we're going to move on to something else, because as soon as that happens, the oil and gas industry will stay there and they'll continue to try to roll things back. So community groups have to stay very closely involved to make sure that 181 gets implemented in the way that it really should. The second thing is also with community groups, but again with legislative priorities, which is to continue to do whatever is possible to incentivize clean energy production and clean energy distribution. There's lots of things that can happen on the Colorado, on the state level to do that. And like I said, at some point in time, there's going to be a very obvious tipping point if we're not there already on some of these things. And the legislature can play a very positive role in that, but they can't do it without the community either. It can't just be legislators that say, we want to pass this bill or that bill. The community has to support it. And we know that the fossil fuel industry and those interests are going to be at the Capitol every day trying to prevent those things from happening. So community groups have to be able to counter that and be a presence just as much as the industry is.
That's Mike Foote, who served in the Colorado State Legislature representing Eastern Boulder County. He's transitioning away from the state legislature, but he's still very much involved in oil and gas issues. And he's one of the participants in a forum that's happening virtually this evening on fracking in Boulder County. The other confirmed participants is Boulder County Commissioner Matt Jones, All the county commissioner candidates have been invited to participate in the panel discussion, and it's being hosted by the Boulder County Fracking Ban Coalition. That actually consists of 57 groups and businesses, and it includes 350 Colorado. And you can find out more about this forum that is happening this evening from 6:30 to 7:45 p.m. at the website for 350 Colorado, 350colorado.org. That's 350colorado.org. Just scroll down to their event list and you can find the link to this discussion on fracking that's happening this evening at 6:30 and how to join by Zoom. It is 8:24. You're listening to KGNU. Up next, it's Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Every week, I will remind you it's time to get out the vote. Try to find at least 10 people you can convince to vote. As I said last week, Generation Z will make up 10% of the electorate in 2020. Some people are sending them new voter care packages with an absentee ballot request, an envelope to mail it in, two stamps, and a treat like brownies. You can also encourage them individually by joining the Civic Center's nonpartisan Postcards for Democracy initiative. Write postcards encouraging recent high school graduates to register and vote, or donate to support the project. You can even take part in a virtual postcard writing party today, October 7th. That's the Civic Center's Postcards for Democracy. Donald Trump is still in the early stages of his COVID disease. He is still contagious. He is on strong steroids whose effects include feeling really, really good and common side effects, which include delusions of grandeur and memory loss. Some doctors are guessing he may already be suffering from compromised kidneys and lungs. But for the Trump White House, it's still full steam ahead. The Senate, in the meantime, has stalled out on an aid package for the American people, even as they roar ahead with their Supreme Court nomination. And in the meantime, a recent committee report from the House on COVID interference found that the Trump administration pressured health experts to adopt the administration's talking points, even when they conflict with the science, criticized, sidelined, and fired experts who insisted on sharing accurate scientific information with the public, altered, delayed, and suppressed guidance and scientific reports on testing, protecting children, reopening schools, voting safely, and other topics, authorized questionable virus treatments over the objections of scientists, resisted efforts to ensure the safe development of a vaccine, and diverted $265 million from the CDC and the FDA for an ad campaign to, quote, defeat despair and inspire hope, weeks before the election. A few days ago, the House of Representatives approved scaled-back $2.2 trillion in stimulus money, down from $3.4 trillion. House Democrats do want an aid package passed before the election. A deal is still out of reach, though, since the Senate package is under $1 trillion. Companies are announcing mass layoffs and lost health insurance during this pandemic. Three Senate Republicans are now COVID positive, and Mitch McConnell is shutting down the Senate until October 19th. Republicans oppose the House bill's aid to state and local governments, unemployment insurance, provisions on testing and tracing, and Democratic demands for a child tax credit. They do agree on giving at least some money to the unemployed. If you have thoughts on whether the Senate should meet the House Democrats at least halfway, as Nancy Pelosi hopes, you can contact your senators. And by all means, get out the vote. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's time now for Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and this is the first show I've brought to you anew since the beginning of these chaotic times. I thought I would come back to KGNU and share some ideas on seven different levels of how we can co-create a better planet and come through this chaos in a better way, because we know it wasn't really working before. So I have a few ideas to share, and I like to think in terms of the chakras. All right, so red chakras means wheels of light, in case you skipped that day at yoga class. So red is about survival. Do you know what to do for first aid? Do you have a first aid kit? Do you know self-defense? How are you prepared for an emergency? What are you doing to help rebuild the soil? Are you putting your feet on the earth? Are you moving your body around? This is a really important time to think about survival, how we move our bodies on this planet. We need to think about how we're going to move our bodies into the future. And hopefully one of the bijoux or gems from this pandemic time is to do things more locally, to drive less. We know that traffic has been a huge detriment on the planet. Could we carpool more? Could we walk more, ride our bikes, take the bus? It really works. Remember to move your body in a good way. Exercise, yoga, dance. It doesn't have to be the same thing for everybody. But since Red is about survival, what are you doing to be prepared? What would you do if we had some of the weather disasters that seem to befall our planet over and over again in unexpected ways? Isn't it time that you start to pay attention to this? I buy a bag of chia seeds every time I go to the natural food store because chia, you don't need to cook them. You can just soak them in water and flavor them in many different ways. And it is time to think about what are you doing to enrich the soil, to give back to the earth. It might be time to compost. Hope you have a few ideas here, and we will speak again next week as we move up the chakras for creating a healthier planet.
You can hear Brigitte Mars and Naturally Wednesday mornings here at KGNU.